we're going to talk about the big concept of how powerful it is in those moments in our lives where someone has believed in us. Can you remember maybe the last time you felt that, maybe the first time you felt that, but can you think of a moment? Can you remember a moment in your life where someone did something for you? They mailed you something. They wrote you a letter. They sent you an email. They sent you a text. They called you at just the right time and let you know that they believed in you. And it shifted something. It changed something in you. I'm going to give you 30 seconds, and I would love for you to just share. You can come up here on stage and just share it. I'm going to hand you the microphone. No. You can just share it with somebody sitting next to you. If you came with somebody and you would be open to share that with somebody that's sitting next to you, would you just take 30 seconds? Just tell them. Tell them the moment when someone showed that they believed in you. And then we'll get started in just a second. Awesome. Well, I would, you know, this is one of those downsides to being a big church. There's a lot of upsides to being a big church, but I would love to hear all those stories. And it's a, it would be fun to get to hear those moments. It would probably be a huge encouragement for us all to hear each one of us share about those moments. Mine, when I think back on the moment for me, when I felt that feeling of, oh my goodness, somebody believes in me. It was my freshman year in college. I grew up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and moved to Atlanta to go to college at Georgia Tech. And I'm sitting in my dorm room my freshman year. It was probably a month or two into school. And the phone rang in my dorm room. Do you remember that relic from the past called the landline, you know? Which is so crazy to think now. I guess if I wasn't there, I just would have missed the phone call. But that's what used to happen, right? This was 1998, people, all right? This wasn't even necessarily that long ago. But I remember sitting in that dorm room, the phone rings. I was kind of feeling sad. I was feeling probably a bit homesick. I don't know if I was necessarily depressed, but I definitely was just feeling lonely and sad, and I am an extreme extrovert, and so I hadn't really experienced that feeling much in my life. I was telling my wife this story yesterday, and she said, that was the first time you can remember feeling loneliness when you were 18. Probably, honestly, because I was always around people until that moment. So I'm sitting alone in that dorm room. The phone rings. I answer the phone, and on the other end of the phone was this friend of mine. Her name was Stacy. And Stacy was married to a guy named Troy, and Troy and Stacy had been really important people in my life. They had been, Troy had been a mentor of mine through our church that I grew up in since I was in the fourth grade. Anybody grow up in a Baptist church and you were part of the Royal Ambassadors? Anybody a Royal Ambassador? I can still quote the Royal Ambassador Pledge, which I will not do that for you now, but as a Royal Ambassador, I will do my best to become a well-devoted follower of Jesus, to have a Christ-like concern for all people, and to learn how the message of Christ is carried around the world. Well, as a kid, I was a Royal Ambassador. He was my Royal Ambassador leader, and then when I was in high school, he was my small group leader. He was a student at the University of Alabama, and he, at our church, volunteered to be a small group leader, and he had this group of high school guys that he led us all the way from 9th through 12th grade, and I got to be such good friends with them. I eventually became good friends with Stacy, who we watched Troy date all through college, and then eventually got married, and I remember being there at their wedding. They asked me to be an usher, or an usher, as I like to call it, at their wedding. That's an Atlanta usher joke, but and I looked up to them so much. They were such instrumental people in my life, and little did they know this phone call was going to be this huge gust of wind. It was a huge piece of encouragement. It was a huge moment of encouragement for me. But I was already feeling all that I was feeling as an 18-year-old, and Stacy on the other end, I remember her starting by saying, hey, we just want to let you know we were talking about you last night. And honestly, she didn't have to say anything else after that. I was already in tears because I couldn't believe that somewhere on planet Earth, there were two people sitting around thinking about me or talking about me. It just made such a huge impression on me. And that was more impactful than anything else she said, even though what she went on to say was very true and it was very profound. She said, hey, of all the things that could mess you up in life, Of all the things that could derail you in life, we just wanted to let you know that we were talking about how important it's going to be for you to make a great decision on who you decide to marry. And I remember thinking at the time, Mary, I'm just hoping to get a date for this date party we have this weekend. Marriage feels a long way away, but nonetheless, she said, that will be, other than the decision that you make to follow Jesus, that will be the most important decision that you make in your life. And we just wanted to let you know that we're praying for you and we're praying for your spouse. And I really just wanted to call and tell you that. And that was it. I remember it being a pretty short conversation. I hung up the phone. And I remember just feeling so impacted by that, so encouraged by that. I would imagine you have a story like that. Everyone has a story like that. I mean, too often we think about the stories in our lives where we experienced discouragement or where we experienced those feelings of loneliness or sadness, but it's amazing how crucial, how pivotal those moments are in our lives when someone says to us, I believe in you. I see something in you. I just want to let you know, I think you can. And whether we actually can or not is almost irrelevant. But when someone thinks that we can, it certainly makes a huge difference in our life. In fact, what I want to talk about for the next few minutes is how important this concept is, that really we all need someone to believe in us, right? Everybody needs that. But to me, what's maybe even a layer deeper, or maybe even a layer more important than that, is that we need to believe in someone else. We all need someone to believe in. It's amazing how those two truths are intricately connected, but they're very different. They really speak to this idea that at the core of who we are, there's a couple of really important needs that we have, right? One of the needs that we have is the need for connection, the need to have a relationship. That's really that first one, that we all need someone to believe in us, somebody that we're connected to, somebody that knows us, that cares about us, that is propelling us forward through their encouragement, through their advice, through their words trying to lift us up. We need that. We need community. We need that kind of intimate, deep relationship. But we also need something else that's just as profound, right? We need a sense of purpose. We need an agency on this earth. We need a reason why we exist. And so as I think about our church, which I sit around and think about our church a lot, I think a lot about how our church is not a building. I'm reminded of that every week whenever I walk in here. My office is in this building, and the lights are usually dark because we try to conserve energy because we're woke like that. And it's just quiet, and we keep the air lower. And then on Sundays, it comes to life. And the reason why is because of you, because of the people, because the people make up a church, not the building. The building's just the shell, but it's really the community of people. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about what does it mean for us to be North Point. For those of you that are connected to North Point, this is not going to be a surprise to you. If this is your church, this is not going to be news to you. But for those of you that are thinking about trying to figure out how to make this church your church, my hope is that this will be informative, but it will also be helpful as we think about, well, who are we? Who do we want to be? If we were to complete the phrase, we are North Point, what does that mean? Well, it means that there are some things that we believe, some core beliefs that we have, and one of those is that we do believe that we're better together. We do believe that our life is better when we're connected. We do believe that there is power when I tell you I believe you can do it, and when you tell me I believe I can do it. There's something powerful there. But there's also something powerful in the purpose that we have. That there's a mission that we have to care for, to lead, to propel, to lift up. Not just anyone, but specifically the next generation. That's one of the core things that we believe as a church. I don't know if you recognize this. Last week, Andy was finishing the series that he just did on money. But before he started his message, he talked about these three things that we believe as a church. He says there are three things that make up a great church, and these are three things that we're going after. Number one, that we want to be a group of people that love Jesus. That's who we want to be. Number two, that we want to be a group of people who love like Jesus. That other people, that we would be marked by our love for other people, that other people would know that, you know what, I don't know that I agree with everything that I believe, but I can tell they treat people really good because they love like Jesus. And then the third one was we want to be a church that has a plan on how to reach the next generation for Jesus. See, there are just some missions that are more important, that are more valuable than others, right? I mean, that's just objectively true. If you told me that your mission in life is to try to figure out how to make the greatest chocolate chip cookie on earth, I would say that is a very valuable mission. That is very important. You should chase after that mission with everything you have. But if I were to say, hey, would you consider making the next generation and reaching the next generation and leading the next generation for Jesus on the same level as trying to find or make the world's greatest chocolate chip cookie? I mean, I love what Casey Musgrave says, that we should just follow our heart, you know? You do you, go be whatever you want to be, go make your life about whatever you want to be about. But there are just some things that are better than others, right? There are some desires and missions and purposes in life that are just intrinsically more important than others. There's nothing wrong with going to visit the top 100 barbecue joints in America. There's nothing wrong with trying to figure out which cruise line offers the best cruise. Those are great. Those are noble. Those are worthy. But choosing to link your life with a group of people that are trying to reach the next generation, I would just say that's better. In fact, I don't know a better mission than that. If I knew one, I would go invest my life in it. I know you don't know me and I don't know all of you, but I want my life to have the most impact as possible in these short days that I have. And so I want to invest my life in what is going to provide the most and largest amount of impact in this life. And I think that deciding to give your life to a group of people, to join your life with a group of people, to go reach the next generation for Jesus is, I think, the most important mission that any one of us could have. When we think about, well, what does it mean to be We Are North Point? That's who we are. And so many of you have chosen to do that with your life. I see your shirts. I see you all over the building volunteering in ways and giving your life away on behalf of the next generation. And wouldn't you say it has always been important, but wouldn't you say it's probably more important now than ever before? I mean, if you have teenagers, if you're currently trying to raise teenagers, you know this to be true. That it has probably never been harder to be a teenager in the world than it is today. I saw some statistics recently that were just highlighting this. 3.2 million teenagers stated that they were bullied last year. 1.2 million teenagers dropped out of school last year. There was a nationwide survey done around what teenagers are feeling. 30%, almost one out of three teenagers said at some point in the last year they felt hopeless to the point where there were two consecutive weeks where they dropped their normal activities. 9 out of 10 addicts in the world, do you know when they began experimenting with drugs and alcohol? Before the age of 18. 9 out of 10. Tragically, the second leading cause of death between 15 to 24-year-olds is suicide. I would say that to give your life to reach, influence, lead the next generation for Jesus maybe has never been more important. And it's not just a huge value when we talk about, well, who are we as a church? It's also part of our strategy. See, our strategy is to link up adults with kids and with teenagers on a regular basis. We do it every single week here. And we're as strategic as we know how to be in doing this. There's a guy that wrote a book. There's a guy, he's written many books, but he was a foster kid who eventually grew up to become an adult that is doing a lot to influence churches and civic organizations that are trying to help the next generation. His name is Josh Shipp. And Josh just recently wrote a book called The Grown-Up's Guide to Teenage Humans. You're laughing because you're probably thinking like I'm thinking, well, if there's a guide to understand a teenager, I probably need to read it so that I can understand myself better. And then secondly, so that I can be a better parent when I do, in fact, have teenagers. Here's one of the things that Josh quotes in the adult guide to raising teenage humans. He quotes the study that was done at Harvard University where they tried to figure out, hey, what really is going to help a teenager? What is really going to help stabilize and give them a great foundation? This is what they found. The single most common factor for children who develop resilience is at least one stable and committed relationship with a supportive parent, caregiver, or other adult. When I read this, the first thing I thought was, whew, I am glad I married who I married, because my kids, I can promise you, have at least one stable adult in their life. Now, the other one is still working on stability, emotional stability mainly, but my wife is a fantastic parent to our kids, and it makes me so grateful, because according to Harvard University, it is the key on building resilience in kids and in teenagers, is that they would have just one, at least one stable adult, whether it be a parent, a caregiver, or another adult. These relationships that kids have, they actually provide the protection or the scaffolding to buffer a kid from the developmental disruption that all of us know is going to happen in your childhood or in your teenage years. But they also build key capacities in kids, like the ability to plan and monitor and regulate behavior that enable kids to be able to respond adaptively, both to adversity, but also to be able to thrive in situations. We all know this to be true. But when I read it in this piece of work, I thought, well, that makes so much sense. And it really underscores what we're trying to do as a church. This is our strategy as a church. We can't ensure that every kid has one parent in their life. We can't ensure that every kid has one caregiver, but we can ensure that every kid that we come in contact with has at least one adult in their life that is helping to provide stability and scaffolding and support to build resilience in that kid's life. Or to say it in another way, we believe that every kid is one caring adult away from a better future. Don't you believe this? I mean, this is objectively true according to Harvard University, that every kid is at least one adult away, maybe just one caring adult away from a better future. What do I mean when I say a better future? Well, a future that's filled with better decisions and a future that's absent of the regrets that so many of us have in our childhood and our teenage years. It really begins in that kid's life, in that teenager's life, by providing one caring adult for that student or that kid. And that's what so many of you do in such amazing ways. But it goes beyond just a better future. No, it's actually deeper than that. Every kid is one caring adult away from a better future and a better faith. See, I love what we say all the time in Transit, our middle school environment. If you've never seen one of the baptisms that we do in Transit, we'll have to figure out how to show one in our adult service. But when kids come to tell their story and get baptized in Transit, they all use a line that we've worked on for years. They say, well, hey, my name's Jimmy, and this is my story. They tell their story of what it was like before they met Jesus. They tell what their story's been like since they met Jesus. And then they say thanks to a few people like their parents or their siblings or their small group leader. And then they say, and I am so glad that now I have a faith of my own. And I love that line, that we're trying to help teenagers find a faith of their own. Why? Because your parents' faith only lasts for so long, right? Eventually, you're going to lay down your parents' faith. No, eventually, if you want to become an adult that has a real, legitimate, authentic, genuine faith, it's got to be a faith of your own. It's got to be a faith that's yours. And we believe that a caring adult coming alongside of a teenager or a kid can sometimes influence what that kid believes in powerful ways. That we can come alongside and help that kid see that God is not absent, even though tragedy may have just happened. That we can help that student see that even though it seems like the circumstances of life are painting a picture that God may not care, no, he actually indeed does care. And he's not just going to leave you by yourself. Actually, he's going to be there with you in the middle of the trouble, in the middle of the trauma, in the middle of the tragedy, in the middle of the heartache, in the middle of the heartbreak. He is a loving father who will never leave. He has a plan for your life. He made you. He loves you. And you can trust him when it's good, and you can trust him when it's bad. See, that's what a loving and caring adult can come alongside a kid and a teenager to help them believe. A better future, yes, but a better faith as well. I want to look at just a couple of verses where the Apostle Paul, we talk about the Apostle Paul a lot because he wrote over half the New Testament. And he didn't just believe this. We have words that show that he really believes this. In fact, we believe this because of what he says about this. But he also modeled this for us. He lived his life in such a way that he did this. We see him doing it at first with a friend of his named Barnabas throughout the story of the church in the book of Acts. But we see him doing this as well throughout the rest of his life with a younger guy in his life named Timothy. He was constantly passing along encouragement and inspiration and advice and mistakes that he made and encouragement for the future to Timothy, but also to these churches that he had started all over the Mediterranean rim. And one of those churches that he started was in this little city called Philippi. And the Apostle Paul was sitting in jail, in a Roman jail, chained to a Roman guard, 800 miles away from Philippi, and he decides, wakes up one morning and thinks, I need to write them to let them know how I feel about them. In all of his letters, he gives some sort of commendation, some sort of hello, some sort of greeting. But this one that he gives the church at Philippi, it's especially warm and encouraging. Here's the way he begins this letter in chapter 1, verse 3. He says, I thank my God every time I remember you. Isn't that beautiful? That he's sitting in prison, chained to these shackles, his hands and his feet, but he's writing this letter 800 miles away. As far as we can tell, it had been 10 years since he had been to Philippi. And he says, I just wanted you to know that every time I think of you, I thank God for you. I would imagine that when the church read that at a very personal level, it somehow brought encouragement to them. Wow, Paul's thinking about us. I mean, if I were sitting in jail, I would probably not be thinking about any of you. I would be thinking about how I was going to get out and what I was going to eat once I got out. That's all I'd be thinking about. But Paul's going, no, I'm in jail and I'm thinking about this amazing group of people in Philippi. It's been years since I've seen them. We're separated by hundreds of miles, but every time I think of them, I thank God when I remember them. You might be asking, well, how much did he think about them? How much did he thank God for how much they mattered to him because they mattered to God? Well, he tells us in the next little verse, chapter 1, verse 4, he says, well, in all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy. He's saying, I get really excited. There's a lot of joy in my life. And this word joy is like an overabundance of happiness. It's not just happiness and excitement. It's like on top of joy. He gets so excited. And he says, in all my prayers, when I think about all of you, I always pray with joy. In other words, I can't stop. I mean, I am overcome with giddiness. I am overcome with how much excitement I feel about this group of people. You can feel how much he believes in them and how much believing in them is actually offering him hope along the way. The little verse, the little statement continues. He says, in all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day, even until now. But this gospel that he's referring to, if you've been around church, if you've read the Bible before, you see this word a lot. And the gospel refers to the good news, the believing, the pronouncing this new kingdom that's come, that God has not just given us a better life, but God has saved us, that we were once dead, he's made us alive, that we were once lost, he made us found. And Paul says we have this partnership in this. I think the partnership goes beyond that as well. I think they were mutually encouraging to each other. somehow Paul's relating the fact that not only am I able to believe in you, but you're giving me something to believe in. You're giving me someone to believe in, and it's doing good things for both of us. For those of you that serve in a regular capacity with either the Next Generation or any other organization or any other church, isn't it amazing how when you believe in someone, it actually does something for you? That is amazing to me. That when you believe in someone, it actually changes you. It changes the way you feel about life. It changes the way you feel about the way life should work. It changes the way you feel about the person. It changes the way you feel about yourself. You're able to look in the mirror in the morning and say, wow, need some work, but you are the kind of person that believes in someone. Good for you. People that believe in other people have a higher self-esteem. They have higher purpose in life. They feel a mission and a calling in life. It actually does something for you when you believe in someone else. Paul says it was a partnership. We're actually working together. I need to be known, and you're allowing me someone to know. I need to feel need, and you allow me to have a mission in life. I need to feel connection, and you allow me to feel connected. I need a cause, and you allow me to feel purpose and mission in life. Paul's saying to them, hey, we're working together. Me telling you that you have strengths, encouraging you, it actually does something for both of us. So he goes on and says, in fact, being confident of this, he says, I really believe in this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. See, some of you, I'm going to ask you to do something with this message, and some of you are not going to, because you're already not connecting with what I'm talking about, and that's okay. But I want you to read this verse, because you might connect with this verse. You might be in the middle of a really hard season. You might be in the middle of a really dark season. You might be in the middle of a season where you need to know that he who began a good work in you, and he did. You may not even have realized it, but God has began a good work in you. He began a good work in you a long time ago. And the same one who began the good work is going to carry on that work until completion, until the end of this life. That brings a lot of hope in any situation. And Paul says that if you have life, if you're still breathing, if your heart is beating, then you have hope. And if you have hope, then you can have life. You may fail in life. You may bump into obstacles in life, but you actually can learn from your failures. You can learn from the failures of others. And the one who started it, he's not going to leave you and leave you unfinished. No, he's gonna finish this good work that he already started in you. That's great news. At a real high level, it's as if Paul was trying to say, maybe in our context, a few things that would be specific to us like this. It's as if he's saying, hey, you matter to me because you matter to God. The reason why I remember you, the reason why I'm thanking God for you is because you matter. The reason why you matter to me is because you matter to him. And because you matter, I believe that you have something to offer. I believe that you have purpose in this life, which is what every one of us needs to know. That there is a reason you woke up today. There's a reason you're waking up tomorrow. There's a reason why God has put you on this earth. You have a purpose that goes beyond yourself, and he's given you those strengths to be able to help others, to be able to encourage others. Also, you can learn from failures. You can learn from your failures. You can learn from the failures of your parents. You don't have to be who you were raised to be. No, you can learn from your situation. In fact, maybe God is going to help you realize that the reason why you went through the season you went through was so that you could help someone else who's going through a similar season. That's the way God seems to work. And it's why we believe the best strategy that we could have is for every kid to have one caring adult, because every kid, every student is just one caring adult away from a better future and a better faith. In fact, every time I drop our kids off, we attend the 4:30, and every time we drop our kids off in Wombaland or Upstreet, I'm reminded of this. Because there are people from the time our kids were little babies. We've got five little kids. And I can think of the faces and the names of the people that have invested in their life. I recognize that there are some people like Karen Smoltz that just loves to rock babies, which is great because I don't. And every little baby needs to know that they're loved, that God has a purpose for their life, that Jesus wants to be their friend. I think about our four-year-old Cooper. We drop him off in Wombaland, and Miss Margaret's right there at the front door, such a beam of light, so bright, helping him know that his life matters, that someone other than just his parents knows his name. Our five-year-old, our kindergartner, Sally, she sits down with Miss Emily, who is a teacher during the week, and that I can't even fathom, that she would teach all week long and then come on Sunday and sit down with kids even still. And it is such an amazing encouragement every time I drop her off, because there's gonna come a time in Sally's life where she's gonna bump into something, she's gonna bump into someone, and she's not gonna wanna talk to her dad, she's not gonna wanna talk to her mom, and to think that she has someone in her life that knows her name, that is helping her realize that God is with her. Our son Jake sits down with James every single week. And James is the steadying force that Jake needs in his life. Our daughter Lucy sits down with Miss Leva. And Miss Leva helps remind her that God has given her gifts. God has given her a purpose in this life. See, what we've realized is that it doesn't matter how old the kid is, we're going to invest in the next generation. But the earlier you start investing, the more it pays out, right? That's just the way investments usually work, because of compounding interest. That the sooner you start, the more it helps. And this is true on some level when it comes to kids and adults. I've never seen the stats on it, but I would just imagine that you spend an hour investing in a kid and it's worth as much as a week investing in an adult. Because if you can invest in them when they're young, there's compounding interest over a lifetime. It's as if this is true, that what you do for a kid now actually matters more than what you do for an adult later. I've heard my good friend Reggie Joyner say this for years. That yeah, every church ought to do whatever they can do to help adults, but every church ought to figure out how they can get adults to turn around and help kids and help students, because what you do for a kid now, it just matters so much more. The sooner you start, the more it helps. And some of you are doing that. Some of you have been doing that. But I just want to let you know, our greatest mission is to love Jesus, to love like Jesus, and to be a generation of people that are helping the next generation find Jesus in practical and real ways. And so I've got three applications for you. All of this is just a setup to say, would you help us? If you're not currently helping, would you help us? There are a lot of amazing places to volunteer. There's a lot of amazing things you could do with your life, but I think there are some missions that are objectively more important and better than others. And we love other organizations and support other organizations, but we just want you to know what we're trying to do. We're trying to be a group of people that are trying to reach the next generation for Jesus, and we would love for you to come and join our cause. Number one, if you're not currently serving, start. Try to put that in as few words as possible. Would you just start? Would you jump in? Be a part of what we're doing? Some of you are thinking, well, I don't know a whole lot about the Bible. That's okay. We'll help teach you the things that you do need to know. But here's what's even more important than that. You remember at the beginning of this when you told the story about the person that helped you? How much did that person know about the Bible? Or how much of what they did for you was contingent on how much they knew about the Bible? See, knowledge is important. And there are times when all of us need to know more and expand what we know. But when it comes to affecting other people, you don't have to be all that smart. You don't have to be all that talented. You just have to let them know that you care. Maybe you're thinking, well, I don't really want to pray out loud. That's the most common pushback we get, is I don't want to have to pray out loud. You don't have to pray out loud. If you don't want to pray out loud, you don't have to pray out loud. But I think what you're going to find is that there's roles for everyone. And as you begin to stretch yourself, you actually find that you can overcome some things that you didn't even know you could overcome when you start giving your life away. Maybe some of you are thinking, well, I don't really know if it matters. I don't know if you're going to make a difference either. I really don't. All I know is someone has made a difference in your life, just like someone made a difference in mine. Why not turn back around and try to help the next generation? So if you're not currently serving, start. Second thing is, if you are serving some, would you consider serving more? Some of you, you've been serving in the same role for a long time, and maybe it's time to take a step and take another layer of responsibility, and to take a step into another level of responsibility. Maybe you're thinking, well, I don't know that I can. I don't know that you can either. I'm not up here and I'm going to try to sell you some dream like, you can do it. You might not be able to do it, but that's not what it's about. It's not about whether you can or whether you can't. It's about going, God, I want to be available. I want you to stretch me. I want you to use me. Use my life to make the biggest difference possible. You might not be great at it, but you might be. You never know until you try. And so if you're serving some, take a step to serve more. And then if some of you, maybe you're already serving a lot, would you find someone else to serve? We have found that the people that help us most in regards to recruiting other people are the people that are already serving. Makes sense, right? And so would you consider helping us out by introducing us to someone that we don't already know? Maybe you work with someone. Maybe you teach with someone. Maybe you have a family member. Maybe there's a neighbor that you've been thinking, man, she would be great working with kids. He would be great working with teenagers. Sign them up. Tell them about it, but sign them up. Or don't tell them about it. I don't know. That's your call. I'm just saying, the greatest thing you might be able to do to help them is to say, hey, I really believe in you, and I think God has a purpose for you. We've got a number of different environments. Here are the environments that we have that help the next generation. We have Wombaland, which is 6 weeks to pre-K. We have Upstreet and Kid Stuff, which is our elementary age environment. We've got all different roles in all of them. We've got our middle school environment called Transit, our high school environment called Inside Out. And what I would love for you to do is to go to wearenorthpoint.org. In fact, would you just get your phone out right now? Even if you're not going to do anything about it, would you just get your phone out right now? Especially those of you that are, would you get your phone out, Timothy? That's great. You already got it out. Perfect. Would you go ahead and get your phone out right now? Go to wearenorthpoint.org. Even if you're not going to do anything with it, would you just get it out and look? If you're in the West, if you're watching with us online, would you get your phone out or get another device out? How amazing is that? I know you're watching on a device. Get your other device out because I know you have one. Most of you that are watching already like, we've already got it out. No problem. Thank you. Some of you watch every week online and we love that. In fact, what we know is that if we were to all show up on the same Sunday at the same time, we couldn't even fit in all of our buildings. You know how we know that? Because it's called Easter. So thank you so much for watching online. Honestly, share the link. Tell somebody about it. Invite people over to watch with you. But would you come and be a part of serving with us? Would you come and be a part of serving the next generation with us? If you go to wearenorthpoint.org, wearenorthpoint.org, you're going to see this screen. We are North Point, and we'd love for you to join us. And you just click start here. And then it takes you to a volunteer interest page that is just a real simple thing. It'll take you less than 60 seconds to fill it out. And then we'd love to take it from there and have a conversation with you. We'll have somebody contact you this week to tell you a little bit more about it. We'll allow you to come visit. We'll allow you to see an environment. We'll allow you to sit in a group. We'll allow you to talk to people who already serve. We will make it as easy as possible. But I would love for you to go ahead and take that step. Say, hey, I want to be a part of helping reach the next generation for Jesus. I think it's the most important mission that any one of us could have. So to wrap this up, I just want to ask you a simple question. Who are you believing in? Who knows that you're believing in them? Maybe it means tell them about it. Maybe it means pray for them and send them a note. Maybe it means sign up to be a part of letting the next generation know that we believe in them. I think this was something that was at the heart of Jesus. I know everybody tries to co-opt Jesus for their own thing, but Jesus seemed to have a pretty high opinion of kids. He's the one who said, whoever welcomes one child in my name welcomes me. And so I would love to invite you to be a part of what we think is the greatest mission on earth.